From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. In the criminal justice system, when a homicide case is unsolved, it's called a cold case. There's one Seattle police detective assigned to cold cases. He helped solve the oldest cold case in U.S. history. His name is Detective Mike Sosinski. When a homicide detective retires or gets promoted, his or her unsolved cases get marked as cold, and the Seattle Police Department works on about 10 of those cases at a time, and just about all that work is done by Detective Mike Sosinski. He's been working on cold cases for about 10 years. Before that, he was in homicide. Thanks so much for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
So how'd you get the job looking into cold cases?
Well, I was working in homicide for 10 years prior to getting this opportunity, but my ex-partner retired out of the cold case, and there was an opening, and powers that be asked me if I was interested in a job, and I was, because I was getting a little tired of getting called out at, you know, all hours of the night and working standby and next up, and I took a little bit of a pay cut by going to cold case, but I was ready to leave the regular type homicide and move on with my career.
What was the shift like? I mean, by definition, it's cold, not hot. So does that change your approach to investigating it?
Well, yeah, especially at the time, because we targeted most of our cases that we were targeted were at female victims, because we had a higher chance of solvability.
Why was that?
There's, with a female victim in a homicide, there's more of a chance that there was a sexual assault or there was a strangulation, which a ligature was used, and so we have a higher chance of getting DNA from that.
Mm-hmm. So those were the ones that you kind of focused on at first, but was it a kind of a shift in the way that you worked compared to homicide?
Yes, because here I was, instead of writing up the reports, I'm reading the reports. Okay. And I'm reading reports that are, you know, decades old, something that maybe you and you recall when there used to be carbon paper.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of the files were very, very delicate, but the writing was very interesting, and seeing how the detectives worked back in the 70s and in the 60s, and I even looked at some cases in the 50s.
You're the cold case guy. Is it a desirable job within the police department?
Well, I don't know within the police department. Within the homicide unit, not really. It's a nice place to, like what I did. I wanted to get off doing the regular type of cases. But once again, like I say, it's a pretty significant pay cut. And it's a different type of job. You know, the chases, it's like we say, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll solve a couple cases in a year. Sometimes you're going to go a couple of years, you're not solving a case.
Well, I was going to say, it must be kind of frustrating because it's slow work and takes a while to develop something. And you're the guy, so it must be kind of lonely work too.
I'm fortunate because it's only me working there. I work with the regular homicide unit, actually. My ex-partner, Detective Floyd Steiger, and I still work together a lot. When I need someone to come, I ask, you know, him to assist me, and other members of my squad also, and my sergeant, actually, when in regular homicide, is still my sergeant today. I also work with the Attorney General's office and King County Prosecutor's office, and so I get to, you know, the FBI, whoever I need assistance from, it's there at hand.
Now, you have been working on these for about 10 years, and how many cold cases are there outstanding now in Seattle?
I believe, you know, once again, we work at the Attorney General's office, and it's called the HITS program, and Homicide Incident Tracking System, and they say, like, from 19, I believe it's in the late 70s, I think they say we have, like, 365.
Mm-hmm.
So we have more than that, and we've handled cases all the way back in convicted cases in the late 60s.
Sure. And like, of how often are you able to solve a cold case? You work on 10 at a time. You figure like in a year you'll have solved half of those, some of those?
No,
none of those?
No. Sometimes we'll solve two, maybe three.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we won't have any solved, but most of these cases that we're working on, I think our oldest, actually I'm working on a case right now that's been, I've been working on since the day I got in here. And but most of our cases we worked, like, sometimes I think 5 or 6 years, and once again, we also, a big part of our job now, which wasn't back then, but because of cold cases is expanding nationally, is that we assist other agencies. That's how we became involved in the 1957 case that you made mention of, the oldest cold case in United States history, and that was with the Illinois State Police.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that. I'm joined by Detective Mike Sosinski. He works on cold cases, unsolved homicides for the Seattle Police Department. Maybe you've got a question about how he does his work. It's 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. It's toll-free 800-289-5869. Or you can write to us, conversation@KUOW.org. And this is the oldest cold case in U.S. history that got solved. You worked on it. Tell us a little bit about that case.
Well, I received a phone call from my sergeant. Received the phone call, then he put a little message on my desk. You know, contact the Illinois State Police, Detective Special Agent Brian Hanley. He wants to talk to you about a case. And so I did contact him, and they were looking. They needed me to locate a suspect in the 1957 murder of a 7-year-old, abduction and murder of a 7-year-old girl. Maria Rudolph was her name.
And they had reason to suspect the person might be in this area?
Yes. They, you know, from computer work, they located him in the area and at a place that he was working as a security guard. And so all my job was to go set him up, is to go find him, tell him that some detectives wanted to come talk to him. I don't know what it's about. And that's what I went out to do.
How do you do that without going, oh, as soon as I go back, get back in the car, bing, he's running?
Well, he was 71 years old, and so I just, you know, and he was 71 years old, but so and he had some family here, and the whole process that I had to think out of the box a little bit. So I located, actually, I went to where he worked, and he didn't work there anymore. So I went to his residence, and it was actually the Four Freedoms apartment house, and where he was a security guard there also. And I just used the ruse by saying that I'm just that he witnessed an assault, because I'm usually when you're security guard in where he was at downtown here. I said there was an assault that happened like a year ago. You witnessed it, and someone said that you were there. And he's telling me, no, I didn't witness anything. He goes, oh, but you know what? Yeah, that's right. Actually, I did remember there was a big fight at a bar. I said, well, all my job is to locate the detective, locate you, and the detectives are going to come and find it. So I just got to make sure this is your address, this is your phone number. And yeah.
So you just figured he saw some kind of a disruption at some point, and you just kind of threaded that out there, and he bit.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, I don't know, it's a year ago, you know, a year and a half ago, and I, you know, talked to him, get my name, number, and we bring up the thing, oh, yeah, he's from Illinois. So I'm from Illinois also, and he's from Sycamore, which is great because that's where the crime happened. Mm-hmm. So, but why I was doing that, talking to him in the doorway, I looked behind him, there's a young girl, like 12 years old, that later turned out to be his, I think, step-granddaughter, was laying on a bed there, and just, you know, kind of raised the hair in the back of my neck. I said, ooh. And so when I got back to my office and I contacted the Illinois State Police, I told them that, and I said, oh, by the way, this else is going on. And that was about it. And then they came out, and they had a warrant to go arrest him. And I went with them. Actually, Detective Steiger and I were the ones at the door that arrested him. And then we transported him to the Seattle Police Homicide Office.
And Mike Sosinski, Seattle police detective, is with me. You worked on a case well known to those of us in the University District because it involved a guy who used to panhandle right outside the KUOW studios, a well-known figure on the Ave, a wispy man with kind of his skull-shaped head, and he would sit with a blanket around him asking for spare change. And we were shocked to find out the past that he had. Tell us a little bit about that story and how you were able to crack that case.
Well, once again, I was just my job, again, was just to locate him and actually to see if I can get some DNA from him. I was reference a case from 1976 where a woman was killed in the state of Maine, and the Maine State Police contacted me and asked me if I could help them do this. So I located a person's name was Gary Robb, and I was looking for him, and because he was transient, and sometimes he was up in the U District, sometimes he was down in the South End, and I went to a place where he was collecting mail. The guy said, no, he hasn't collected his mail here for like 2 or 3 years. You know what? I'm a student, and I see him around the U District all the time. So I went to my office, and I was thinking, how can I get his DNA? And so I went to Costco, and I got 3 different bags of different types of Wrigley gum, and I drew up this fake survey sheet. And
You posed as a Wrigley gum survey guy.
That's right. Gum and actually cigarettes, too, actually. Because I had some different types of cigarettes. I'm thinking, what if he doesn't like gum and does he smoke? And so then I just drove over to the U District, and actually I was a couple blocks away from right here. And I talked to seeing a guy in an alley, and I started talking to him, and I realized it wasn't him. And he said, do you see this picture? I said, you know this guy? He goes, why? I said, well, I'm with the VA, and I've got some, he has some benefits. Oh, yeah, he's right, you know, our Urban Outfitters are. He's always all right over there, or near the Goodwill, too. So I drive around the corner, and it's, you know, it's in the summer, and there he is sitting. Matter of fact, sitting right outside your office right mm-hmm. here.
Where he always sat.
Yeah, he was just sitting here. So I walked up to him, and I had this, you know, I had a board, and I say, would you want to take a survey? Tobacco and gum survey, and you get $5 after you take the survey. And he goes, I don't smoke. I said, well, how about some take to the gum survey? He goes, I ain't got no teeth. And I said, well, you can gnaw it or something, can't you? And he goes, all right. So I give him a piece of gum, and he chews it, and he says, oh, what's that, peppermint? He goes, I don't like that. So I had envelopes in my pocket, so into my bag, and I took out an envelope. I said, well, okay, just spit it out here, I'll give you another one. So he spit it in that envelope, and I put it back in my pocket, well, actually the holder of my briefcase, and I took out another piece of gum. He says, oh, I really like this kind of gum. What is it? And, you know, it's a Dutch apple. So, and he's chomping. This is really good. And I'm actually starting to laugh to myself. And I said, let me take a picture. You like it so much. So I take a picture of him doing it. Part of it because I want to show my friends. Yeah, these are the desperados I'm chasing, right? And I said, well, okay, take this one. So I looks like I'm taking out the same envelope, but actually I'm taking out a different envelope. And I haven't put the gum in there. And I do this another time.
Yeah. And so what was plan B? Suppose you said, yeah, I like this gum a lot. Thanks a lot, pal. And yeah. He just sits there chewing it. What was plan B?
Then I'd have to go back to the drawing board, think of something else, bring somebody else on. I have a couple of these little things that I don't want to give them away that I'm doing actually now. I'm just thinking out of the box how to get someone's DNA, you know, surreptitiously. And
all right. So if you're guilty of something and some guy walks you up on the street to you and asks you to chew some gum, see if he stopped anybody else along the way and maybe has to see his company credentials. If you just joined us, we're talking about cold cases with Detective Mike Sosinski. He's been doing that for the Seattle Police Department for a decade. And I understand, like, before 2000, it was really hard to get convictions on these cold cases, but there's been a lot of advances, particularly in DNA evidence that's improved that record.
Yeah. The whole DNA was what – it's not only getting into convictions, but it actually just got agencies throughout the nation interested in solving these type of cases. By saying, look, we can solve a lot of these cases through DNA and – or not even just even DNA, but just having these cases revisited with fresh eyes. What happens when an investigation is when you start reading a follow-up from a detective who worked the case and starts, you know, I was called at home, I went to the scene, and this is what I seen, and this is what I talked to this witness, and I talked to this, and this is the suspect that they're saying, and then I followed the suspect, and I got his work records and this, and then it led to his arrest, or sometimes not. But what happens when you're a cold case detective is you have to avoid going down the same road as those detectives are bringing you.
Mm-hmm. The people who investigated it the first
Correct.
Time. So you got to look at the records and then kind of forget about the records.
Yes, you have to go. You know, you want to look at it freshly and say, why is that not right?
Yeah.
Because obviously the case was not solved.
Right.
They are going down a certain road, and you know you want to veer off. So don't go always down that same road. And
so is most of the work though that like looking at where they went and seeing the road they took and seeing the road they didn't take, or is a lot of the work for a cold case going out and re-interviewing people, like generating new evidence
right.
on a case? How does that work?
That's the main thing is re-interviewing people. After we do the, you know, forensically, you know, we have the DNA that is a big assistance, which they didn't have back then. So a lot of times when somebody is, if somebody was stabbed to death, say, usually when somebody is stabbing somebody else and when there's multiple stab wounds, the perpetrator will cut himself. It's not like the movies now, but so when you're swinging a knife or your hands are sliding, you're sweaty and stuff, you are going to cut yourself. And a lot of times we'll find two types of blood at the scene. So now we're able to take that second blood and submit it for DNA, and it'll come, you know, it'll say, okay, we established a profile mm-hmm. of a man, of a suspect. And it may be in the system, may not be in the system. And like on a couple of the cases, like the oldest cold case we did in Seattle's history, actually we obtained blood just like that and actually cigarettes. And the person at one point was in prison, but they didn't take his DNA from prison when they were supposed to.
Yeah.
But when he was released, he's also a sexual offender.
Detective Sosinski, do you have a lot of families of people who've been murdered who are kind of constantly in touch with you trying to find out what you get next, Mike? What's going on with this case?
Every day.
Yeah,
every day, and I, you know, I don't want to say that gets frustrating. Something cause when you don't have something, or right, they get frustrated. When I tell them, I did all I could on this case, but I'm still looking at it. I mean, I still have it there, and things pop up when someone writes me a letter from jail. I know something about this case, usually, or from prison. I know something about this case, or it'll lead to another, or else their DNA pops up for some other reason. So I call back every person who calls me, and if they say, "Oh, my father died and, you know, was murdered in 1974, and they leave me a voice message, and if I get the date and the time and his name, I will order that case from the vault, and I will review that case usually prior to the calling them back and say, "This is what was with the case. This is what happened."
And you like working cold cases?
Yes.
Why is that?
By the end of the road probably for me is the pinnacle of my career will be working cold cases, and I enjoy it. I enjoy reading. I read. That's all I do is usually read at home. That's my pleasure. And it's very fulfilling when we do solve a case, and also I have patience, and I'm realizing. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Is there a case that you've been working on now for a long time that's trying your patience?
Yes. And
can you talk about it?
No.
Okay. All right.
Actually, we're working on several type of cases like that. But I've worked on a few cases. There's a double homicide that I worked on in Seattle. Actually, it was in West Seattle, and. I'm just not getting the results that I want, and I have to go re-interview a lot of people, and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I like asking people who do police work about, you know, police work is so portrayed in the TV and the movie, so I like asking them, what do they get wrong? But they get so many things wrong that takes forever. Yeah. Is there anything that they actually get right when you watch detective procedurals that are, like, portraying what you do? Is there anything that they actually understand about your work when they're showing it on the big screen or the small screen?
I don't really watch any of the television shows. Yeah. My wife always used to watch, you know, Cold Case. And they had some, you know, beautiful blonde, blue-eyed girl there, you know, I always thought it was kind of cool that they're always playing the music from the era that the homicide. I said, I got to start doing that. I got the 1967 greatest hits or something like that.
Yeah, if you check over to 67 Case, drive around with a cassette playing that in your car.
Yeah. But I think in some of the movies they do show, or in some of the books also that you read, you know, they do show the fatigue of the homicide detectives. And some of the frustration, because especially in homicide, it's go, 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 go. And you walk into your office, and unlike a patrolman, where every day is a new day, detectives, your cases never go away. Mm-hmm. There's no statute of limitations on homicides.
And cold cases never go away.
Never go away until we put them to bed.
Hey, Mike Sosinski, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you very much for having me.
Detective Mike Sosinski, he is the cold case officer for the Seattle Police Department. From KUOW, I'm Ross Reynolds.